This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The U.S. Supreme Court today hears arguments in a death penalty case that tests how judges should evaluate claims of race discrimination in jury selection. The High Court ruled long ago that race could not be a factor when prosecutors choose jurors. But how does a judge decide when race has been a factor? That's the issue in today's case. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
In any trial, prospective jurors may be disqualified for cause. That is, the judge decides the person is biased or cannot follow the law. Or a prospective juror may be disqualified from serving for no reason at all. That's called a peremptory challenge, and each side has a set number of these arbitrary challenges. The trouble is that historically, these strikes have often been based on race. And in 1986, the Supreme Court decided that the then existing rules for preventing discrimination were not working. The court established a new set of rules to make it easier for defendants to show that jurors were excluded because of their race. The case before the court today tests how those rules are to be applied. It involves an African-American man named Thomas Miller L., convicted in Texas of a brutal murder and sentenced to death shortly before the Supreme Court issued its new jury regimen. After the Supreme Court's decision in 1986, Miller L.'s lawyers appealed, claiming that blacks had been systematically excluded from his jury. The case was sent back to the trial judge, who heard evidence and rejected the claim. Every appellate court since has sustained that judgment, refusing to reopen the question. Now, however, the U.S. Supreme Court has decided to take a second look. Miller L.'s case arises in the context of a prosecutor's office with a history of blatant race discrimination. In the 1960s, prosecutors in the Dallas County DA's office were trained using a manual that instructed them, quote, "Do not take Jews, Negroes, Dagos, Mexicans, or a member of any minority race on a jury, no matter how rich or how well educated." By 1969, another training memo was drafted telling prosecutors to exclude, quote, any member of a minority group which may be subject to oppression because, quote, minority races almost always empathize with a defendant. That manual was used by the Dallas DA's office into the 1980s, though prosecutors assert it was not used by the time of Miller L.'s trial in 1985. At that trial, the prosecution struck 10 out of 11 qualified black jurors with peremptory challenges. A study conducted by the Dallas Morning News at the time asserted that this was a pattern, that in 100 trials studied randomly by the paper, 92% of African Americans were struck with peremptory challenges. A videotape prepared for a clemency hearing for Miller L. shows the black jurors who were struck amazed to learn why. Wayman Kennedy is an IBM employee and a deacon of his church.
I was surprised to find that the prosecution was the one that struck me because I would have thought it would have been the other way around.
Postal worker Billy Fields.
And as a matter of fact, after everything was over, the judge called me up and commented that he was surprised that the prosecution had stricken me himself.
The Texas Attorney General John Cornyn, who is defending this case in the Supreme Court, declined to be interviewed for this broadcast, as did the Dallas DA and individual prosecutors involved in the case. But St. Louis DA Robert McCullough, president of the District Attorneys Association, was willing to talk.
Numbers in and of themselves are meaningless. What's important are the reasons behind that, and that's why the prosecutor is required to say, here, I struck this juror for this particular reason.
Indeed, the prosecutors did give non-racial reasons for striking each of the African Americans. First, they assert that the vast majority of black prospective jurors opposed the death penalty, while the vast majority of the whites did not.
That's just not borne out by the record.
Lawyer Jim Marcus represents Miller L. He observes that prosecutors kept a card on each juror, noting his or her race. The African-American jurors, who were struck with peremptory challenges, he says, did not express doubts about the death penalty, and they were treated entirely differently from whites who gave similar answers. He points to Billy Fields as just one example. According to the state's briefs, there were two reasons prosecutors struck Fields: that he believed in rehabilitation and that his brother at one point had served time on a drug charge. But Marcus says many of the white jurors who were not challenged expressed a similar belief in rehabilitation, and some had siblings who had served time in prison. Marcus points to a white juror named Node Vickery as a prime example.
He's got both of the two criteria that the state is allegedly using to eliminate Mr. Fields. He had a sister who had been convicted of a crime, and they both, if when you read their jury selection interviews side by side, I mean, they're remarkably similar, and they both say it wouldn't affect their ability to serve on the jury.
The judge, in evaluating the discrimination question, also admitted testimony from former Dallas prosecutors, though he indicated he would not give their testimony much weight. Former Assistant DA Lawrence Baraka.
The policy, in a nutshell, was try to get an all-white jury of old white men.
Julius Whittier served as an assistant DA from 1981 to 89.
I do believe that blacks were routinely excluded for various reasons from capital murder jury selection.
Other former prosecutors have since supported these claims. Ellen Abbott worked in the DA's office as a prosecutor in the juvenile division in 1985 and 86, the years at issue in this case.
We were told to use our peremptory challenges, the challenges that you can do for any reason, to eliminate the black jurors where possible when the juvenile defendant was black. The same thing was true of Hispanic jurors when the juvenile defendant was Hispanic.
And after the Supreme Court's ruling in 1986, laying down specific rules against discrimination?
The general feeling was we would just find other ways to make sure that the people we wanted eliminated, which read, you know, the minorities, would be eliminated. So, you know, you'd ask if you'd ever had a family member who had been arrested and, you know, sort of more tangential questions so that you had a legitimate basis to survive the challenge. I don't think it was possible for minority defendants to get a fair trial.
Certainly, Millerell didn't think he got a fair trial, as he said in an American Radio Works documentary.
It's no question, no doubt in my mind that it was unfair. It was almost like a nightmare, like I wasn't in America.
The Supreme Court has said that discrimination in jury selection harms not only the defendant, but the jury system itself and the public's confidence in it. The Miller-L case is not important in the sense that it's likely to immediately affect many other defendants, but defense lawyers say that if they lose this case, the system of preventing discrimination in jury selection will be little more than a sham. Defense lawyer Jim Marcus.
If this evidence isn't enough to persuade the court that there was racial discrimination, I can't imagine what would be.
For prosecutors, though, there's no reason to revisit jury selection in a case like this because the trial judge considered and dismissed the claim of discrimination. Again, Bob McCullough of the District Attorneys Association.
All of that was aired before the trial judge, who was able to make the determination of the credibility of all the people involved and is able to make his determination. The reasons given for striking the jurors in this particular case were not based upon the race of those individuals.
It's a dicey question, but a hugely important one, according to longtime Supreme Court advocate and former prosecutor Carter Phillips, who served in the Reagan Justice Department. He filed a brief siding with Miller L. in this case and contends that the death penalty cannot be defended if race is ever a factor.
It's easy to explain striking any individual juror in the pool, you know, for reasons that are not race-based, even though race plays an absolute criteria in your decision-making. But when you have a practice of the entire prosecutor's office with training manuals telling you how to engage in the rankest forms of discrimination, then it seems to me those kinds of pad explanations simply aren't enough.
Just what explanations are enough is now up to the Supreme Court. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.